John 6. Let's read that. Now, we're going to look at some of the claims of Jesus, but we're also going to look at the response of the crowd to these claims. Let's go to John chapter 6. Okay. All right, starting in verse 43, it says up there, 35 and 50, I'll start in verse 43. "Stop grumbling among yourselves," Jesus answered. "No one can come to me unless the Father sent me draws them, and I will raise them up at the last day. It is written the prophets, they will all be taught by God. Everyone who has heard the Father and learned from him comes to me. No one has seen the Father except the one who is from God. Only he has seen the Father. Very truly I tell you, the one who believes has eternal life. I am the bread of life. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, yet they died. But here is the bread that comes down from heaven, which anyone may eat and not die. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats this bread will live forever. This bread is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world." So Jesus says to the crowd, "I'm the bread of life." He says, if you eat me spiritually, you'll have eternal life. Did Muhammad say something like that?
No.
Did Krishna say something like that? No, because he's not even a real person. Did Lao Tzu, the founder of Taoism, say something like that? Or how about Baha'u'llah, who founded the Baha'i faith? In fact, has any other human being ever said something like this? "I'm the bread of life." Maybe you go to the cray-cray place, you might find somebody saying that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe. Even there, they don't say that. They say some other stuff. Never said that one. What had Jesus done just, you know, a couple few hours before he made this statement? He made bread. He made bread from nothing and fed over 10,000 people. 5,000 meant 10,000 people. All right, let's go to another one, John 8:46. Oh, by the way, yeah, I want us to remember to look at the responses. In this case, the response was relatively muted compared to some of the other claims he made. Then the Jews began to argue sharply among themselves, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" Okay, let's go to John 8:46. John 8:46. I'll start in verse 45. This is Jesus speaking again. He says, "Yet because I tell you the truth, you do not believe me. Can any of you prove me guilty of sin? If I'm telling the truth, why don't you believe me?" Now, you could argue he didn't make an actual claim, but what did he just claim? To be without sin. So let's practice this one. We put Ken on the spot. All right, Zane, could you stand up? Here we go.
Sin.
No. You say,
"Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Can anyone prove me guilty of sin?"
"Yes."
"Yeah."
"Oh, yeah. That's what I thought."
"Oh, man. Here's my..."
"Thank you.
Here's my list."
"Here's my pebbles."
I mean, Muhammad, did he claim to be without sin? No, in fact, he was kind of famous for losing his temper. It's kind of well known. What about Moses? Yeah, he, in fact, he wasn't able to enter the promised land because of his sin. And the thing is, I just imagine Jesus would say to him, because these are people who have been around him for a long time. They've been with him 24/7 for months, maybe a couple years by this time. And Jesus said to them, "Can any of you prove me guilty of sin?" I imagine Peter saying, Well, no. "Well, there's this one time."
No.
Yeah. Now, anybody else besides Jesus, if they said to the people who have known them for years, "Can anybody prove me guilty of sin?" What would happen?
They'd be like,
"There's this time, and there's that time, and there's this time, and there's that time." Verse 48, let's see their response. The Jews answered him, aren't you right in saying that you are a Samaritan and demon-possessed? In other words, what they didn't say is, yes, we can. What they said is, he's crazy. So are crazy people somehow going to be sinless? Now again, if Jesus was without sin, then he is not in some pantheon of religious leaders. He would be unique amongst all human beings, whoever lived. All right, how about John 8:58? Okay, remember the point. We're trying to look at the cumulative case here. The cumulative case regarding who Jesus actually is. And we're making an assumption that these are faithful, you know, representations of what he actually claimed, which I believe we can show beyond a reasonable doubt. Anyway, John 8, starting at verse 57. A little context here. They're talking about his, how he can defend the things he's saying. He's talking about the miracles that he did. Anyway, verse 57. I'll start in verse 56 just for the context. Your father Abraham rejoiced at the thought of seeing my day. He saw it and was glad. You are not yet 50 years old, they said to him, and you have seen Abraham? Very truly I tell you, Jesus said, before Abraham was born, I am. Okay? What's Jesus claiming here? He's claiming that he is the eternal one. He is the self-existent creator of the universe. That he is the I am. That means not before Abraham was born, I was, but before Abraham was born, I am. And again, has anybody ever claimed to be God? Yeah, I've met people like that. You meet them on the street, you kind of, you know, maybe give them a sandwich or something like that, but more likely kind of, you know, walk around them because they're crazy. Let's look at the reaction that they had. At this, they picked up stones to stone him. But Jesus hid himself, slipping away from the temple grounds. Does this make sense? Given that he just claimed to be God in the flesh, does it make sense that at this point they picked up stones to stone him?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. Because if Jesus is not God, then he is a despicable, dangerous, really bad person. But if he is God, then, you know, all other religions are a lie. And all these other pretenders, well, Moses maybe can stand a little bit there. But prophets who said things other than what Jesus said, such as a particular famous one from somewhere in Arabia who said that Jesus was not crucified, for example, would be a liar. And definitely not a prophet, that's for sure. Okay. What about John 10, verse 30? We'll look at two more. There's several others in the book of John. John 10, verse 30. I'll go back to verse 29. My Father, who has given them to me, he's talking about his followers, is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand. I and the Father are one. So what's Jesus claiming here? Well, you could argue two ways on this. Maybe he's saying essentially that I am God. Or maybe he's saying, you know, me and God, we're like really close. You know, Buddha might have said something like that, possibly. Maybe. Maybe, I don't know, Confucius might have said that. So how did the crowd interpret what he said? Again, his Jewish opponents picked up stones to stone him. But Jesus said to them, let's just make it clear here. I've shown you many good works from the Father. For which of these do you stone me? He said, we're not stoning you for any good work, they replied, but for blasphemy. Because you, a mere man, claim to be God. Jesus said, no, I'm not claiming to be God. I'm just claiming that I'm really close to him. No, that's not what he said. Because he was, in fact, claiming to be God. Okay, let's go to our next one. Some of you know where we're going. Jim knows where we're going because we already went over this one in our studies not too long ago. Right, Jim?
Yeah.
John 11. A little background here. Lazarus. Mary, Martha, and Lazarus were very close friends of Jesus. I would argue that probably they were closer friends to Jesus even than some of the apostles. Whenever he would come to Jerusalem, he'd stay at their house. All right, and there's a lot of things we could say about that. Jesus, by this time, had healed how many people? Thousands, certainly, at least thousands. All right, and so Lazarus is really sick. So Mary sent messages to Jesus. Lazarus is sick. Come heal him. I mean, obviously he's going to come. And Jesus says, no, I'm kind of busy right now, essentially. No, I'm not going to come right now. All right? And you can read verses 1 through around 15 where it talks about that. But we know that Jesus knew exactly what he's doing. So it's 4 days later, verse 17. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been dead and been in the tomb for 4 days. So then he goes to the house, and Martha is not pleased. All right? You know, and you can't blame her. You know, her brother died because Jesus could have healed him. She knows that. He raised people from the dead. So, verse 21, Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. And Martha answered, I know he'll rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. And he asks Martha and everybody in this room, do you believe this? Jesus said, I'm the resurrection and the life. He says, if you believe in me, you will live even though you die. I mean, it's not that different from when he said, I'm the bread of life, really. Again, any other religious leader make a claim like this? Obviously not. Obviously not, because that's craziness. That's insanity. All right, and a good question tonight is, all right, he said this. The question is, do you believe that he is? Or do you believe that he is not? Because if you believe that he is, that has tremendous claims on your life. And if you believe that he's not, you should probably walk out of this room and never come back to this meeting and do your best to undermine this club, because this club is a dangerous club, messing people up by making them believe in a bunch of stuff that's a bunch of garbage. But the idea, oh, that's nice. That's so nice. That's a nice little club. So we're a nice little social group. It's great. Hey, they even have picnics and they play frisbee golf, you know? No, that option doesn't really work. If Jesus is not the resurrection and the life, then this is a dangerous organization that's messing people over. Right? Because honestly, I mean, it's a club. So, you know, it's just a club. But, you know, Jesus, anyway, if to the extent we're representing Jesus, we're saying, you need to change your life, like, totally. I just happened to point at you, but it's everybody, right? So, anyway, we go out to the tomb. I probably almost everybody here knows how the story ends. I assume that you know, but we're going to read it anyway, because it's so awesome. It's so awesome. So, Jesus goes out to the tomb, verse 38, once again, Jesus, deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there's a bad odor. For he's been there 4 days. 4 days in a warm Middle Eastern climate. Okay. Yeah. I'm a chemist. All right. We're talking about, there's this one compound called cadaverine. There's another one called putrescine. Yeah, these start to kind of, yeah. And there's the slimy stuff, and yeah. All right, that's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you always heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out! The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face, Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. I love the simplicity of verse 45. Therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did believed in him. Yeah, I guess so. I could see how they might have.
Yes.
I could see how they might have. Now again, either Jesus is the resurrection and the life, and if you put your faith in him, he will give you eternal life. Or he's, I don't know what he is, but it's not good. Okay? And by the way, that was not the only response. If you go down to verse 47, the chief priest, so basically some people went to Jerusalem and said, hey, did you hear what happened? By the way, Bethany is like a mile and a half from Jerusalem. You know, it's like a little bit farther than from here to, but maybe twice as far as from here to the lake over there, you know. It's close. Alright. Did you hear what happened? So in verse 47, the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting of the Sanhedrin. What are we accomplishing? They asked. Here's this man performing many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him and take, and then the Romans will come and take away both our temple and our nation. Then one of them named Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, spoke up, you know nothing at all. You don't realize that it is better for you that one man die for the people than the whole nation perish. The irony of that statement is very deep. All right? So they decided to kill him. Now, why did they decide to kill him? Because he's a liar or a crazy person? No. Because he's a miracle worker. They're going to kill him because they believe he raised Lazarus from the dead. Nobody at that time doubted whether Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. That was not the issue. The issue is, what are we going to do about that? Because if Jesus is who he says he is, then he's a dangerous man to anybody who won't believe in him. And he would blow up any religion, including the Judaism that was there at that time. All right, and we could look at other claims. I'm the way, the truth, and the life, John 14. All authority under heaven and earth has been given to me, etc. So, was Jesus crazy? Well, you know, Mark 3, his family said, yeah, he's kind of out of his mind. And then the rabbi said he's possessed by a demon, which is kind of the same thing. But what do crazy people do? They do crazy things. Jesus did not do that sort of thing. Is he a liar? What do liars do? They lie. Okay? So now I want to look at another area. Let me stop right there. Question. Do you believe that Jesus is the resurrection and the life?
Yes.
And if you do, all right, well, what are you going to do about that? Just go home and study for your finals and get a summer job and go off and, you know, just be a regular person? Or is that going to have an effect? Like, believe in him and turn your life over to him. All right, now I'm going to talk about one other area of evidence for Jesus being who he said he was. And obviously his miracles, which were undoubted miracles, unquestioned miracles in the time, that says something. But I want to look at something else that says something about whether Jesus is who he says he is. That would be some of the messianic prophecies. We already read John 5:39 and 40. What about Luke 24:44, where Jesus said near the end of his life, at which point he fulfilled almost all the messianic prophecies, he said, this is what I told you while I was still with you. Everything must be fulfilled that is written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms. By the way, the Jewish Bible had three divisions, the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms. So Jesus said, by the end of the deal here, all the prophecies concerning the Messiah must be fulfilled by me. All right, so let's talk about that. Let's take the skeptic's perspective. Let's allow the skeptic to ask questions. Let's pretend that we don't already know some stuff that probably everybody in here or most people in here actually already know. All right, so what if these prophecies, we're going to read about eight or nine of them. What if these prophecies really weren't even actually written until after the event? Okay. If that were the case, these prophecies wouldn't prove anything. Well, we do have the Septuagint translation, which was done by about 200 BC, of all the Old Testament books. So every prophecy we're going to look at is at least 200 years old. We know that as a matter of recorded history. There's also the Dead Sea Scrolls, some of which were written down as late as 50 AD, but others written down as early as 250 BC. We have manuscripts of every Old Testament book except Esther among the Dead Sea Scrolls. Again, what this means is not only did they exist 200 years before Jesus, but they were considered part of the Old Testament canon at least 200 years before Jesus. Okay? So, there you go. Definitely written before Jesus. All right, there's the great Qumran Isaiah scroll from 150 BC. How do I know these things really happen? Now, most of the prophecies we're going to look at are matters of fulfillment that is historically recorded, including by non-Christians. I don't have time to read the sayings of Josephus and Tacitus and the Jewish Talmud, but not all, but nearly all of the prophecy fulfillments I'm going to mention are a matter of history, recorded by believers, obviously, but also recorded by non-believers, such as where he's born, where he died, how he died, things like that. Okay, got it? Okay, question number three. All right, Pontius Pilate is a real person. We saw that last week. Okay, great. Are these really prophecies about the Messiah? So maybe, what you could read is, you read in some Old Testament thing, it says, he climbed a tree. Well, Jesus climbed a tree, so he's the Messiah. Maybe it's something like that, okay? In other words, maybe we're taking these things out of context. Now, we're going to look at, I believe about eight passages. Seven of those eight were believed by the Jewish people to be prophecies about their Messiah before Jesus was born. So if the Jews said, yeah, these are prophecies about our Messiah, then I guess they're prophecies about the Messiah. All right? And we're going to see some of the details are so specific to deny that Jesus fulfilled this and to deny that it's messianic doesn't even really make any sense. All right? Last one. Let's imagine Jesus is thinking, all right, great. I want to claim to be the Messiah. Okay? So it says I need to climb a tree. So I guess I'll climb a tree. It says I need to ride into Jerusalem on a donkey. All right, great. I'll just ride on a donkey. All right? So maybe that's what it is. So, sure, Jesus fulfilled these prophecies. He read the Old Testament. So he said he has to do this. So great. I just get a checklist. All right? Okay. Claim to be the Messiah here. Really? So I got a checklist, okay? Ride in a donkey, okay?
Yeah.
All right, good. There's a problem with that, which is it involves like dying and being tortured and stuff like that. And in which case, the whole thing, the great thing about being the Messiah is sort of if you get killed, you don't get any of the bennies of that lie that you were trying to push on people. Isaiah 53. Some of these are going to be pretty familiar. Probably. Others, maybe not so much. Now, I know for Jan and Zane, this is old stuff. You've seen it all, right? But maybe not for some of us. Isaiah 53. Who has believed our message? To whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot, like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him. Nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind. A man of suffering, familiar with pain, like one from whom people hide their faces. He was despised and rejected, and we held him in low esteem. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering. We considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shears is silent, so he did not open his mouth. Now, Is this an accurate description to say that Jesus was despised and rejected by human beings? Is that a matter of historical record?
No.
He was executed.
I'm thinking about all his friends and
He was despised and rejected by mankind to the point of being executed.
Yeah.
Historical fact. When was this written? Around 720 BC. Around 750 years before the events happened. So what was going on here in Merced, California 750 years ago? To give a sense of how long beforehand that was. What was going on around here? Put it this way. You know, maybe Columbus gets more credit than he deserved, but he hadn't sailed the ocean blue yet. That's how long ago we're talking about. Okay? Now, could Jesus have read Isaiah 53, which I'm sure he did, and thought, all right, I got to get despised and rejected by men. Could Jesus have arranged to be despised and rejected? Yeah. How about going up to the Pharisees and saying, you're a bunch of whitewashed tombs and a brood of vipers. Do you think that might get you despised and rejected?
Yeah.
Probably. Okay, I'll go for that one. What about being pierced? By the way, this is not about his being crucified. It's about him being pierced with that sword or that javelin in the side. Could Jesus have arranged that one? Maybe. He's up there on the cross, you know. He's like, hey, you guys are killing me. You guys are killing me. Could you do me a favor? I mean, is it really? Am I going to be dead anyway? But, you know, just trust me. I mean, just trust me. Okay, that's ridiculous. And how about being silent when accused? Could Jesus have read that and thought, okay, I got to do that too? I guess so, but the problem is then you die. That doesn't really have, that's not a very good plan. Let's look at some other prophecies. All right, Micah 5 verse 2. Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah 5 verse 2. Well, it's right there, all right? So you don't have to look it up. It's nice to look it up, but you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, they were small among the clans of Judah. Out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times. Is this, in fact, a messianic prophecy? Yes. It's a prophecy of a human being who will be ruler over God's people. By the way, where was Jesus born? Bethlehem. Actually, there were two Bethlehems in Israel. The small of the two being Bethlehem Ephrathah, the one that Jesus was from. All right, and it's not like people question where that's where he was born. All right, so if you want to be the Messiah, you have to get born in Bethlehem. All right, could Jesus have arranged to be born in Bethlehem? That's a bit of a stretch. Unless, of course, he's God, in which case, I guess he could have. But, so if you want to be the Messiah, you have to be born in Bethlehem. But let's go to Isaiah 9, verse 1, and then we'll follow up with verse 6. Okay, another messianic prophecy. Clearly a messianic prophecy. Undeniably a messianic prophecy, as you'll see when we read it. Isaiah 9, we're not even doing Isaiah 7, which is a really cool one. Nevertheless, it says here, there'll be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the future, he'll honor Galilee of the Gentiles, of the nations, by the way of the sea, beyond the Jordan. All right? Oh, skipping down to verse 6 to get some context. For to us a child is born. To us a son is given. The government will be on his shoulders. He'll be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. This is a messianic prophecy. Okay, now maybe you don't know where Zebulun and Naphtali are. There were 12 tribes. 13, but whatever. Alright, here's Zebulun. Here's Naphtali. Okay, got it. And here's Nazareth, where Jesus was born. Alright, here we go. Go back. Zebulun. Naphtali. Nazareth. Okay. So in order to be the Messiah, you have to be born in Bethlehem, but you have to come from somewhere kind of in the border region between those two tribes, Zebulun and Naphtali. How many people are alive today, right now, that were born in Bethlehem, but actually kind of grew up and came from Galilee in the area around where Nazareth is? Okay, anybody here qualify for that? Now, could Jesus have arranged after being born in Bethlehem and then being taken down to Egypt, Hosea 12:1, out of Egypt I called my son, which is not even on the list here. All right. And then end up in Galilee in the region of Zebulun and Naphtali. Okay. Here's another one. Psalm 22. By the way, of our 8 prophecies, this is the only one on the list that would not have been identified as messianic by the Jews before the time of Jesus, just so you know. Isaiah 53, messianic. Micah 5, messianic. Isaiah 9, the other ones we're going to see, Daniel 9, obviously, Zechariah 11. Of the ones on the list, this is the only one we're going to look at that would not have been considered messianic by the Jews, probably. But let's read it. I think it's got some content there that might possibly affect your opinion about it. All right, dogs surround me, a pack of villains encircles me. They have pierced my hands and my feet. All my bones are on display. People stare and gloat over me. They divide my garments among them, and they cast lots for my clothing. Did you know that crucifixion was invented by the Persians, as far as we know anyway, around 300 BC, which would be 700 years after this poem was written? And the first, but the Persians did not pierce hands and feet. They actually tied them and strung them up, essentially. The first ones to actually nail to a cross were the Romans, around 100 BC. So imagine David writing down this psalm here. So yeah, they pierced my hands and my feet. Okay. Wow, I guess I just wrote that down. Okay, sure, yeah. And the whole thing. Now, by the way, when Jesus was on the cross, did they do one for you, one for you, one for me? Or did they gamble? Which did they do with this clothing? Which one did they do? Well, they actually did both. So they kind of divided his clothing, but then when they got to his inner garment, which was extra valuable apparently, that it was seamless, they gambled over it. And I imagine, the apostles coming to Psalm 22 and go, wow, that's pretty amazing. Now, is it a historical fact that Jesus was crucified? But yeah. Could Jesus have arranged to get crucified in order to kind of make this whole thing work out? Well, that's pretty tough. Because he didn't do it. Only the Romans had the power to crucify, and he didn't break any Roman laws. The Jews couldn't crucify. He broke a few things they wouldn't have liked, I guess. All right? It would have been tough to get crucified. And as far as the dividing the garments among them, well, that's another interesting one. All right. Now, what we're looking at here is a cumulative case here. All right. What I want us to see is the cumulative case. Remember Luke 24:44. Everything that was written about me must be fulfilled. Okay. Zechariah 11. Verse 12. Again, this is going to clearly be a messianic prophecy if you look at the context. In fact, I'll go back to verse 10 just so you see the messianic context. Then I took my staff called favor, the first covenant, and I broke it, revoking the covenant I had made with all the nations. It was revoked on that day, so the oppressed of the flock who were watching me knew it was the word of the Lord. I told them, if you think it best, give me my pay, but if not, keep it. So they paid me 30 pieces of silver. The Lord said to me, throw it to the potter, the handsome price at which they valued me. So I took the 30 pieces of silver, I threw them to the potter, to the house of the Lord.
Are you reading Matthew?
No, I'm reading Zechariah.
It's in Zechariah.
Yeah. It's Matthew 27 is where it's fulfilled, okay? So that's the fulfillment part. Matthew 26 is the fulfillment of the 30 pieces of silver, and Matthew 27 is the fulfillment of the house of the Lord to the potter. Okay? Yeah, that's the where it's fulfilled. All right, so how much was Jesus betrayed for?
30 pieces of silver.
All right. Now, by the way, of all the prophecies we're going to look at, this is the only one that is verified only in the New Testament. All the others are a matter of historical record. All right, but here's the deal. If you're going to lie, I don't know, did you ever lie when you were a teenager to your parents? Oh, you, of course, yeah. And so when you lie, you give as little detail as possible, right? You don't, because the more detail you give, the more likely you're going to get caught. The reason they said it was 30 pieces of silver is because it was 30 pieces of silver.
Yeah.
All right? And then what happened, if you read the account in Matthew 27, Judas had remorse over what had happened. I don't think he was actually trying to get Jesus killed. I think he was trying to sort of start a rebellion, essentially. And so when Jesus was crucified in remorse, he gave them back the money. He threw it at the feet of the Pharisees there. And they said, this is blood money. So they took it and they bought a potter's field. They bought a potter's field. Okay? Daniel 9. This one is going to be clearly messianic, clearly written long before the events happened, and a matter of historical record. What we're talking about is what we know happened. You don't just need the New Testament writers, as if they'd lie about it anyway, but okay, great. Verse 24, Daniel 9. 70 sevens, 70 sevens. All right, here we go. Remember how to do long multiplication? All right. All right. 490. By the way, this is 490 years. The reason I know it's 490 years is just read Daniel 9, starting in verse 1, where it says 70 years. That was the prophecy in Jeremiah of the time of the captivity. And Daniel's been in captivity for about 69 years. He's reading the prophecy in Jeremiah. He says, God, hello, come and save. And then God says, no, not 70 years, 70 times 7. That's what he says. Here we go. Let me read on. All right. Oops, I lost my page. Good. 77 is a decree for your people and your holy city to finish transgression, to put an end to sin, to atone for wickedness, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the Messiah. To anoint the Messiah. No one understands this from the time the word goes out to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until the Messiah, the ruler, comes. There'll be seven sevens and 62 sevens, etc. All right, so was there ever a decree in the Old Testament recorded to restore and rebuild Jerusalem? Well, it turns out that Cyrus issued a decree 538 B.C., all right, it's recorded in Ezra chapter 1, to go back and rebuild the temple. Not the city, but the temple. It wasn't completed until 516 B.C., but then later, quite a bit later, Artaxerxes, as recorded in Ezra chapter 7, it's right there, said, go back and rebuild Jerusalem in the seventh year of Artaxerxes, which is the year 458 B.C. Okay? Also, the other way around, 490 minus 458 is 32. But then we'll make it negative 32, right?
Yeah,
That'd be 32 AD? No. Actually, 33 AD. The reason is there was no year zero. There's the year 1 BC, and then there's the year 1 AD. Alright, so the prophecy in Daniel 9 is that this decree, which was issued around 50 years after Daniel died, and then 490 years after that, that's when the Messiah would come to Jerusalem. In about like 33 AD. So, by the way, if you read it carefully, alright, read my book on Daniel, it says, after seven sevens and 62 sevens, so what it really says is, sometime during that last week, so somewhere between 26 and 33 AD, somewhere in there, the Messiah is going to come to Jerusalem, and he's going to die, and he's going to be an atoning sacrifice, and he's going to be anointed as the Messiah. All right, so if you want to claim to be the Messiah, you have to be born in Bethlehem. Any takers? No. All right, you have to be actually come from Galilee, sort of the western part of Galilee, somewhere near Nazareth. You have to be despised and rejected. Jim's saying, I'm good. I could do that. Yeah, I could definitely do that. Yeah. All right. You have to be silent when you're being accused of something, okay? And you have to be pierced and crucified, both pierced and crucified. You have to have your garments divided over and gambled over both. You have to be betrayed. And by the way, God says in that passage, the handsome price at which they priced me. God is declaring in Zechariah 11, the handsome price at which they priced me. God. All right. And you have to come to Jerusalem somewhere around AD 33, actually closer to maybe AD 30, and be given as a sacrifice for the sins of the people. So, is there any other rational conclusion? Is there any other rational conclusion about this? No. I don't know how people get around this. Those who try to destroy this argument, what they do is they take each, that what they need to do, and this is the only thing they do, is they take each individual prophecy and find an excuse or reason for ignoring that one. The one in Psalm 22, it turns out the Hebrew word that means pierced, that Hebrew word with one letter change could also mean camel. Okay. All right, they have cameled my hands. You know. Okay. But I'm telling you that, just go ahead and read. If you want to read how people dismiss these things. All right. So, I'd say Jesus is the Messiah. And so we got two kind of pieces of information going here. Oh, it's 20 of 9, so I have to end. So guess what I don't even have time to talk about?
No.
The resurrection. How about the fact of his crucifixion? The fact of the empty tomb. The fact of the public claim right there in Jerusalem within weeks of his resurrection. And the apparent fact of over 500 witnesses. Well, we don't have time for that. So we'll just have to say, it might be worth noticing there's probably a pretty good reason to think, yeah, he was indeed raised from the dead on the third day. We have other theories. So my conclusion is, because Jesus fulfilled the prophecies of the Messiah, because he was raised from the dead, and because he worked miracles which proclaimed the truth of his claims about himself, I believe Jesus is who he says he is. He is God in the flesh. He is the only way to heaven. He is the bread of life. He is the only perfect person who ever lived. In fact, he is God.
Amen.
And if you believe in him, you will live even though you die. So that's my conclusion. All right. We normally try to end by 20, but at the absolute latest, feel free to leave if you want to leave. But if anybody has any questions? Normally we do discussion groups, but with this series we're not doing discussion groups because these are not raising like personal issues.
Yeah, I have a question.
All right.
Where was it?
For 2 minutes. I think it was in Zechariah. Sorry, I drove me. You can field another question as I'm trying to...
I think you're the only one. We'll just call it quits. You can do it one-on-one. Bye, Esme. See you all Friday. See you all Friday at the park at 5:30, especially Garrick's getting baptized. All right, Zane, what is it?
It was like anointed one, and then the alternate reading could have been Lord in place. Why? What was
it? Well,
is that kind of like the same thing?
The word is Messiah. You look at the Hebrew. And there. It's a matter of translation. So what you could do, Zane, is look at the Hebrew interlinear and see what the actual Hebrew words are. And I believe those who say the anointed place instead of the anointed one, I believe they're given into liberal critics rather than making the most reasonable translation.
Yeah, because my translation says anointed place, but then there's a footnote. It's like, or anointed one. But then later it says the anointed one.
Well, anyway, the anointed one is a closer literal translation of what the Hebrew says. And just the context, it's a person. Right?
Yeah, he is a person.
So anyway, the Hebrew word is Messiah. Messiah.
So.
Are you a Taylor Swift fan?
Well, he's leading, yes, and his dancers too. One of her dancers is teaching a lesson in L.A.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but that's on Friday, but I'm going to be here.
Hey, guys, those who know Josh, give him a call, you know, something. Texts are nice. Phone calls are way better. If you're sick, a text is not as good as a phone call. I'm so glad you texted him, by the way. That's, well, you should. But hey, you did better than anybody else. Amen. Praise the Lord. Great job. Great job.
Bill, I was a bit confused about that. I know it is 70 times 7, but then the 458.
That's when the decree, it's in Ezra chapter 7. It's the seventh year of Artaxerxes. There's the decree of Darius, but there's the decree of Ezra. All right. Alright, fifth month of the seventh year of the king, Artaxerxes. Artaxerxes began in ruling in 465 BC, so that'd be 458 BC. If you subtract 490 from 458, you get negative 32, which would mean 32 AD, except in this case, it's actually 33 AD. Right. Seventh year of Artaxerxes, look it up on Wikipedia, ruled 465 to whatever. So that's 458 BC.
Look at this snatchable waist dynamic.
And with the, so 490, well, so 490 was the decree, and 458.
70 sevens, which is 490. 490 years. How do you know that? Just read the prophecy. Read Daniel 9. I mean, can I prove beyond any possible doubt that the 490 is years? I can't. But what I can say is it's the obvious interpretation given the context. Mm-hmm. All right, blah, 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 blah. Given the, it would last for 70 years. And God says not 70, but 70 times 7. Mm-hmm. Years is implied. So 490 what? Well, years. Obviously. And the ones who deny that, it's because they don't want to admit the implication. Now, there's arguments over whether those years are 365-day years or 360-day years. There's that whole thing. And I don't, you know, I go into that in my book, you know. Kevin, thank you. Did you water? Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Is everything still alive? We haven't been home yet.
So I was watering the front ones, right? And there's some like bugs on them. I was like flicking them off.
Good.
On the roses.
Jan, there were bugs on the roses.
Well, are they like small and green?
Yeah, there was like in the front ones. Mice have the scurps.
Are they big? So how big are they?
Huh?
The cat.
Yeah, cats. Okay. The cats can go for 3 days by themselves.
Well, I mean, the enemy cat, like the public enemy number one.
Well, maybe he was hanging out in the backyard. Was he? I don't know. Probably. I've hit that cat with rocks now.
Which one?
The one that pooped in the house and raped my cat. I mean. Yeah, he came in and he had her, and he was pulling out her hair and just, yeah.
You threw rocks at him?
Yeah, I've hit him twice.
Ouch.
Not it wouldn't kill him. Probably didn't even hurt him, but I scared him pretty good, yeah.
And still.
Hit him twice.
A man.
I don't have a right to injure the cat, but I have a right to scare it away, in my opinion.
Yeah, because that cat still kept on coming around.
If you can't control your tomcat, you should just keep it inside.
Maybe it's just like wild or, you know, free roaming.
Yeah, there's no...
No, I'm pretty sure that cat has an owner. There's a lot of cats in the neighborhood. There might be some that don't have an owner, possibly. Anyway, whatever. It's... Whatever. Yeah, hey, how's it going? Who's listening?
Exactly. Goodbye.